Yeah, so you know, we're seeing decreases in public health funding across all states. The federal government, you know, discretionary health funding has been cut, you know, double digits just in the last couple of years, certainly since 2010, 2011. And at the state level, we saw cuts in 33 states. Now, a small cut in Montana this year is 1.8%, but a cut nonetheless. Overall, in a report that we put out earlier this year looking at trends, we found that 29 states have decreased funding in the past fiscal year, 23 states 2 years in a row, 14 states 3 years in a row. So, you know, when we're trying to be better prepared for more outbreaks and more serious outbreaks, and to think that we are providing less resources is troublesome. You know, overall, we've seen a cut in 40,000 public health staff at the state and local level over the last 10 years. So that's one of the things we worry about.
If you had to make a guess, why do you think are these funding levels being cut like this? Is it just simple, you got to balance the book somehow?
Yeah, well, keep in mind that the federal government, for example, and that's, you know, where 50% of public health money comes from for state and local health departments, we've seen across-the-board cuts through sequestration. And sequestration is random. It's by definition, it's across the board. So, you know, there's no prioritization involved in that. You know, we've also seen, you know, major cuts in you know, efforts to balance the budget and cut the deficit. In addition, CDC's budget is down, you know, well over $1 billion just over the last couple of years. So, you know, when the nation's leading public health agency that focuses on in chronic and infectious diseases are receiving those cuts, that's felt at the state level because much of their money goes out to the states in cooperative agreements and grants. So it's not that these aren't priorities, but they're competing priorities now. Nothing could be more important than the nation's health. An infectious disease outbreak, you know, is serious business. And when you look at something that you know is going to happen every year, there will be an annual flu. Its severity may differ year to year. Every few decades, we'll see the threat of a pandemic flu outbreak, as we saw most recently in 2009. And the vaccination rate among adults is 40% in Montana. We actually set the bar at flu rates for those 6 months and older in Montana. That number is 41%. So 6 out of 10 residents of the state don't receive an annual flu vaccination. And then another one of the indicators is on the childhood vaccination rates. And the goal is 95% vaccination. Granted, you know, the highest vaccination rate is somewhere in the mid-70s, but Montana comes in at 60% again.
And that's for pertussis, is that what you're referring to?
That's just for the series of childhood vaccinations. For whooping cough, for pertussis specifically, the goal is 90%. It's a high in Delaware of 90.9%, a low in Texas of 77.4%. Montana comes in at 86.6. So, you know, granted, not far below where we set the goal. But overall, no one is where we want to be. We look at HPV vaccinations, and there's three doses that are recommended. We have states coming in at 12%, you know, as high as 50, as low as 12% in HPV rates, you know, for girls getting all three doses, and Montana's at 41.6. So there's one that you're, you know, well above the curve. But one issue in this report is we have relatively low vaccination rates and routine preventive care screening rates. And from our perspective, it's all about prevention. So, you know, we're certainly going to advocate that we strengthen fundamental capabilities, having expert public health workforce, giving them the tools that they need to quickly detect, control, and treat diseases. We need to increase the number of Americans and Montanans receiving recommended vaccines. A whole set of indicators in the report are around surveillance and laboratory capacity, and two out of these three were met in Montana. You know, a lot of the mitigation of the effects of an infectious disease is around surveillance. How quickly is an outbreak detected? And that involves communications, interoperability, to make sure that we see, you know, trends and patterns. And the patterns that you're seeing are things like, you know, there are programs that monitor in you know, what prescriptions are being written, and you suddenly see an uptake in prescriptions being written that, you know, treat a particular disease. You know, that's the sentinel for, you know, to tell you where there might be an outbreak. So Montana is adequately prepared for a surge.
If we can go back to vaccines, just real briefly, HPV vaccine, that's a very socially, very politically charged vaccine. And flu shots, I know people who are extremely intelligent, logical, and they do not trust the flu shot.
Yeah. I mean, the best we can say is, you know, overwhelming preponderance of the evidence is that these shots are safe. And yes, there are social factors, there are religious factors, there are political factors. You can go down the list, but serious public health organizations, leading public health experts, all find that, you know, overwhelmingly the benefits, you know, way outweigh any risks, if any. You know, vaccination rates are important for a couple of reasons. One is, like, a flu vaccination is important for the annual flu, but should there be a pandemic, and we had a pandemic flu 4 years ago, but luckily less of a strain than we thought it might be, but ramping up vaccination rates, when you have a pandemic, you're looking for 100% vaccination. And if the population year in, year out is only getting vaccinated 40% of the time, there's no way to go from 40 to 100 in the event of an emergency. So, you know, that's sort of looking more long-term. Then the HPV, yeah, I mean, that's been somewhat politicized. Fewer than half of the states require such vaccinations. You know, education for parents about the vaccine or funding for those vaccinations. But Centers for Disease Control, American Academy of Pediatrics, recommend that the vaccination be put in place for males and females, you know, starting 11, 12 years of age. Numerous studies showing the safety of the vaccines. Numerous studies showing the vaccines do not lead to increased sexual activity. And with that in mind, you know, the health effects are that it contributes to 20,000 new cases of cancer in women and 12,000 in men each year. And then you go back to the rates, and, you know, it's no wonder we're seeing that kind of incidence when, you know, three doses are required and the rates are, you know, Mississippi, 12.1% for HPV, 76%, the highest rate of childhood vaccination. So there's a lot that can be read into that, you know, what some of the external factors are that would cause HPV only be at 12%. But have the normal, you know, series of childhood vaccinations over a period of time have the highest rate in the country.
Well, back to your other points before I jumped in there. Montana does cover routine HIV screening under the Medicaid programs, and our public health lab does have the capacity in place to assure timely transportation of samples to the appropriate public health laboratory. So we do, Montana does pretty well there.
Yeah, and that's a surge capacity issue. I don't know if we refer to it as such in this report, but we've also put out over the last 10 years an annual report even broader than this on public health emergency preparedness. And where many states fall short over time is really on the surge capacity. You know, maybe they're capable or they have the resources to deal with more limited outbreaks, but, you know, when there's something out of the ordinary that hits a hurricane, hits a pandemic flu, a tornado, that's the surge capacity. And, you know, are you able to step it up? And sometimes we measure bed capacity. We measure whether there are agreements in place between, you know, different subdivisions of government to cooperate, you know, whether there are pandemic plans in place, whether those plans have been exercised. I mean, those are the kinds of indicators that we've had in the past. But, you know, this particular laboratory capacity one has found its way into, you know, numerous reports that we've put out, and it's, you know, very much a surge issue.
How concerned should we be about things like bioterrorism, the emergence of antibiotic-resistant superbugs? How prepared are we as a nation, as a planet, to deal with these things?
It's interesting. We just put a report out prior to this on prescription drug abuse. You know, looked at this, just amazing. Not once or twice more than previous years, but 5, 6, 7, 8, 100% increases in prescriptions for painkillers. You know, we're seeing the same thing, you know, and there's a big article, front page articles yesterday on attention deficit disorder, same thing, all of those going up by hundreds of percent. Mm-hmm. And then here we have these antibiotic prescriptions use going up. I don't have the chart in front of me, but it was definitely 400 or 500% over a 10-year period. And so it's a resistance issue. A majority, frankly, of the antibiotics are being used in animals. These are animals that are then become food, and it's reducing the ability of humans to, you know, to fight some of these outbreaks. So, yeah, the idea of superbugs that are resistant to antibiotics is, you know, a big worry for sure.
Yeah, and just was it yesterday, earlier this week, the FDA pointed out its concerns about antibiotic soaps and overuse of those, and we could be...
Yeah, that was in the last day or so. Yeah, but that's why, again, the vigilance things, it's always changing. What's acceptable, what's not. I listened to a whole report this morning on multivitamins, and suddenly multivitamins aren't, you know, doing what they need to do, and you have to keep revisiting. And that's the theme behind our reports, is that some reports we put out on an annual basis, some reports we put out, you know, as a snapshot, and not sure what's going to happen with this one. It's the first time we've put it out. But in the emergency preparedness reports that include these infectious disease outbreaks, you know, we're constantly raising the bar. I'll use as an example pandemic flu. Prior to the outbreaks of bird flu in Asia, 2005-ish, 2006, we began to really put the word out of the importance of preparation and planning. And the indicator that we had in our report back maybe 8 years ago, I think, was as simple as, does the state have a pandemic flu plan? That was it. Does it have a plan? And I don't have it in front of me, but I'm sure a majority of states did not have a plan. And then, you revisit that the next year, raise the indicator to, here's a series of criteria. Did the plans meet those criteria? Then you put in another indicator a year or two out that says, have they exercised those plans and taken remediation through after-action plans? And you know what I mean? So you keep raising the bar. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make the public as knowledgeable about these issues, to call attention to where states are and where states are in comparison to each other. It's meant in the positive to promote health and nation's public health and greater investments in these programs.
Rich Hamburg, the Trust for America's Health Deputy Director. Very much appreciate your time, Rich.
My pleasure. Have a great day.